Welcome to the Euro Auto Training Garage Spiel Podcast. Garage Spiel Podcasts are brought to you by your friends at Baum Tools Unlimited and Stahlwilly Tools North America. Learn more at www.baumtools.com and www.stahlwilly.com. Baum Tools Unlimited and Stahlwilly Tools North America are proud to underwrite the Garage Spiel Podcasts. This is part two of our eight-part interview with Dennis Simonitis, Road & Track Magazine's engineering editor. In this episode, Dennis talks about some of the fondest memories of his 30-plus year career at Road & Track Magazine.
You write a wide variety of articles for Road & Track, from your long-standing column to road tests and, from my standpoint, pretty much everything in between. You've been around the world probably many times, exotic places, met a lot of interesting people. I mean, most of us would only dream about that kind of a career. What people or places made the biggest impression or the fondest memories?
Wow. First of all, you certainly have it right. I mean, I'm blessed with my career. I really am. There's another side to it that's worth mentioning, though, and that is it's been said that a special interest publishing job is the best way to screw up a nice hobby. Because, you know, by the weekend, you've been working all week long with cars, in this case, with the automotive industry, with the product. And, I don't know, by the weekend, some of my car pals will call and say, "Hey, come on, bring out the Morgan. Let's drive up." Oh, thanks, no. I think I gave it the office. But yes, you're absolutely right. It's also a wonderful way to see the world and do all kinds of fabulous things. I kind of anticipated, Gary, this question, so I did some thinking on it. And I thought, well, boy, not to disappoint, but some of the best memories aren't necessarily car-related. There are things like discovering Kabuki Theater in Japan, hearing a music recital at a hotel in the Alps, you know, with glass window looking out on this fabulous view, you know, meeting fabulous people in various venues. I'm an old, I like to collect old books, including old Baedeker guidebooks. And one of the high points of my career, I have a 1910 Baedeker guidebook for Northern Italy. I was in Northern Italy. I was looking through the book for where I was. And sure, there was this cool inn described called Albergo Verbano, the Verbano Inn. And it was on this little island called Isola de Pescatori, a fisherman's island, in, it must be, what lake? Maggiore, I guess. In any case, it's written up in this 1910 guidebook. I thought, gee, I wonder if it's still there. So I took this little ferry boat across to the island, and I went walking around. And sure enough, the Albergo Verbano was still there. And it's such a cool place. I've stayed there since. And I thought, God, this is pretty amazing, having a 1910 guidebook and finding, in this case, about 90 years later, that the place is still there and still neat. So, yes, I mean, this has been high point of career, is things like that. Also cars, though. There's no question about the cars. Let's see. One of them has to be because of the uniqueness of it. Several years ago, I had an opportunity at Monterey to drive the Napier Railton. You know the Napier Railton? It's John Cobb was a rich guy in England in the 20s and 30s and such, who had this race car commissioned that had a Napier Lion engine. It's a 24-liter engine. Stop and think about that. It's an engine that's like five times the displacement of a small block Chevy. So it's a huge, huge,
huge
powerful
engine. Absolutely.
And it was powerful as well. It just had torque coming out of its rear wheels. Cobb had the car commissioned and built in the, like, 1932-33. He drove it to all kinds of records at places like Brooklands, at Bonneville, and other places. You know, it was going 150 miles an hour when the usual streetcar was going 50 at the top speed.
Sure.
And Cobb drove it with just, there are pictures of him with all the wheels off the ground at Brooklands and a bump. I mean, just amazing things. Well, 3 years ago, I guess it was, they brought the car to Monterey for display, and because they were showing large displacement cars, and I had opportunity to drive the car. So I think I'm the only American who's ever driven the Napier Railton, and brief though the drive was, it was just a thrill of a lifetime.
I mean, how fast did you go?
Do you remember? Yeah, 20 maybe, 30. No, you know, I'm driving a museum piece, and I'm driving it on the Polo Ground Road in Monterey. So no, did I get out of first gear? I think I got out of first gear just to see if I could shift it in a second. No, I was. This car was going to get back exactly as I was given it. So it would have been fun to drive at something resembling speed. That would be. But it would also have been scary as could be, because you're driving a museum piece.
Sure.
But to have driven it at all, to be in the same place that John Cobb was steering this great monster, and hearing this, the Napier line was originally an aviation engine, and it's called a broad arrow design, which is not the only of its kind, but it was a very special kind of engine design. Rather than being a V, it's three banks of cylinders in sort of a W shape.
Okay.
And the Brits call it broad arrow design. And so it's got these, like I said, these huge, huge cylinders, three banks of four each. So it's a 12-cylinder engine. And each cylinder is huge, being 24 liters total. So when it's running, and particularly when you get on the throttle a little bit, I mean, it sounds like, I don't know, a B-17 engine. You know, it's just huge,
just
and powerful.
Yeah.
And of course, has, as I said, has torque just coming out its ears. So driving it as briefly as I did, I thought, God, this is amazing. So that was fun. That was certainly a high point of my automotive sampling. Another one that comes to mind, I drove a Formula One car. I drove the Benetton B186. And this is an era that you're familiar with, I know. Mm-hmm. This is 1987. I think it was 87 that we published. Okay, it was in late 86 when I drove the car. We published the article in April of 87. In any case, it was the Formula One car, the car that Teo Fabi was driving at the time. Fabi and Berger were the two drivers on the team.
Sure, yeah.
That year, earlier in the year, Berger had won, I think, the Mexico Grand Prix. So it was even a successful Formula One car. It was back in this super turbo era where we didn't know it at the time, but we learned later they were running like 60 PSI of boost. Not very long, but you know, only maybe for qualifying, but they were doing it. And the cars were just amazing. Well, Innes Ireland, rest his soul, and I were the road and track people given the opportunity to drive the car. And though I'm sure they kept the wick turned down a little bit, it was still, I'm sure, it has to be the most powerful car, the quickest car I've ever driven.
Well, there's no way on earth you could have driven that slowly.
I spun it. We were at Silverstone, and we were testing, we were driving, Innes was doing full lapping, where he found out after driving it for three or four or five laps, he was getting down in that brief time to equaling his race time when he was a Formula One driver.
Oh, my God.
In Lotus. So, you know, he was finding the car so immensely capable that barely exercising it, he was equaling his own lap time. Well, he came back at one point and he said, the team guy said, what kind of boost did you see in us? And he said, oh, gee, I don't know. I'm too busy to look. And I thought, oh, hey, don't worry about that. I'm the engineering editor. I'll check out the boost gauge. So my opportunity was basically to drive it up and down the straightaway and to get a feeling for the immense acceleration and the immense braking. So, in fact, I got an opportunity to experience the immense acceleration, and, you know, I wound it out to whatever the rev limit was in first and hit second and popped the clutch and floored it in second and hit a little spot of water and did a wonderful pirouette. And I thought, uh-oh, this is not a good idea. So nailed the clutch, nailed the brake, and the car, you know, came to a stop. And then I sort of wondered, is this a good idea or not? And I decided that I would drive it more cautiously thereafter. And no, I never did see the boost. But later, this is kind of fun, later in the day we had opportunity to drive the car for photography for a Benetton ad to be shown in the Benetton sporting goods stores, sports clothes stores. And so, in fact, for I don't know how long, a period of time, I could go into a Benetton store and go over to one of the little kiosks showing videos, and I could see a video of me driving the car around Silverstone because I was the driver for it. Now, no one else in the world knew that helmet, but I did. I was, hey, this is really cool. So that was, again, another high point.
Be sure to check out the rest of our interview with Dennis at www.euroautotraining.com.